Hello and welcome. You're listening to Fourth Estate, the show where journalists talk journalism. Coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on the Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on the Community Radio Network and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. My name is Peter Frey, and for my sins, I'm the co-director of the Centre for Media Transition at UTS, and my producer today is the ever-wonderful Anthony Dockrell. Coming up, if we could channel the Queen of England for a second, we could say that last year was the ABC's annus horribilis. You know, losing an MD in Michelle Guthrie and soon after the chair in Justine Milne, amid all sorts of accusations and allegations of bias, political interference, inappropriate behaviours and what have you. This year promises much calmer waters with the appointment of Ita Buttrose as the new permanent chair and a new permanent MD in the works. Or does it? Only last week, a Senate inquiry was hearing about political interference at the ABC, or an alleged political interference at the ABC, and talking again about the funding for the broadcaster. And then there's an election to come. Can the ABC stop making news about itself? My guest today sits calmly in the middle, and sometimes just to one side, of all this and a heck of a lot more. He is the news director of the ABC, the top editorial job after the MD, who also comes with the title editor-in-chief, but really he's the boss of news. Welcome to the show, Gavin Morris.
Hello, Peter. And look, I'm very flattered that you've introduced me as a journalist, because I sometimes feel like I was a journalist once, and these days I'm often more a newsocrat. But I love to still associate with journalists.
Well, I think you are a journalist. You know, one thing that occurs to me is that you are, it's in your blood. Just as in mine. And I remember when I left, left the Herald, just to digress for a second, I thought, I could do anything. I could manage, BHP. And people would look at me and go, no, you're a journalist. And so if or ever you should leave the ABC or do whatever and want to be a banker, they'll look at you and go, you're a journalist, mate.
You know what? You're absolutely right. And I think that those days where you get taken further away from what's going on in the newsroom, what's going on in the program teams, the less happy I feel about that. So I really do try as much as I can to stay as close to some of those decisions and some of that coverage as I possibly can. And, whenever I do, it's a better day. And journalism is still a terrific game to be in.
It's the best game in town. I'm just reading your bio again. It's a bit like a boy's own adventure in journalism, really. A decade in international news, CNN in London, reporter, producer, senior editor, Middle East, working on the launch of Al Jazeera English. Then you got back to Oz. You're in the bosom of Anti. You've been head of news content, national editor of the ABC Online, head of continuous news, and now news director. What? Just going back to what you just said there, actually, what, for the benefit of the listeners, what does the news director do at the ABC? It's a big beast.
It is a big beast. And when you think about ABC News, it covers everything from Facebook to Four Corners and all the touch points in audiences that we have across radio and television and online and digital and social media. And so the journalism we do and the output that we produce is as diverse as you could possibly imagine it to be in every sense. So really, I suppose my job increasingly is to ensure that we have good people given the freedom to be able to specialise in each of those things and to create great stories, great content and coverage, great investigative journalism, just as well as great local news coverage, but to ensure that there's a good team and to ensure that they're well supported and that we're making great resourcing decisions to ensure that all of that can happen at the same time with the velocity that each one of those things requires.
That's remarkable. Just take an example. A day, like a big story breaks, like a cardinal getting sentenced to 6 years in prison. What is your? Do you have a much personal impact with that? Attached with that? Does that actually intersect with your day as such on that level or not?
Not as much as I wish it did. When I was in that head of content role, you referred to much more hands-on, really sort of looking at the different parts of the daily news output as head of content and really kind of very hands-on in relation to some of the big editorial decisions. Now, unfortunately, I do less of that. And I, by the nature of my role, try to keep in touch with the senior people that we've got who are now in those head roles, who are absolutely in touch with the daily journalism teams. Obviously, when something flares up, or there's a particular issue here, or a controversy there, I get a lot more involved.
You get the bad news.
Exactly.
Do you have a morning meeting with all the kind of key heads? Is that what happens?
So there's a daily editorial meeting, mm-hmm. which these days I don't get to nearly as often as I once did. But I trust our heads to sort of guide those conversations, and then I stay in touch with those people as much as I can. But I suppose increasingly how I see my role is to ensure that they're fully supported mm-hmm. with the resources and with any backup they need and with any sort of support on any questions they've got. But all these people are pretty experienced as well, and so they hardly need me to sort of micromanage editorial decisions.
Gavin, you do nothing.
On a good day, Peter, when everything's going swimmingly, my job is fairly relaxed.
And how many good days would you have in a period of 1 month?
We're having more good days this year than we were last year.
As I pointed out, yes.
Exactly. So,
well, let's just quickly talk about the past year, because I do really want to talk about the future for the ABC, but I think we can't ignore recent past. Justin Milne, it's now a matter of record that he was very concerned about keeping the government happy, shall we put it that way, and he was prepared to push out some senior journalists maybe, or talk the rhetoric of pushing senior journalists out, that he was against, Triple J changing the date of the Hottest 100, various other things, as we know. Were you alarmed about what was going on there then?
I think when you look across the span of last year, it started with some sort of editorial controversies, and pretty much as the year went along, it spiraled into a complex set of overlapping issues and concerns. Everything from, funding cuts to a lot of political sort of commentary around the ABC. There's a lot of media commentary around the ABC. There were these personnel issues that were clearly going on behind the scenes. It felt by the end of the year like a perfect storm. It really did.
It was a shit fight, really.
Yeah, and I often thought, look, if the best I can do in my role in a period like that is to protect as much as I can the people in our journalism teams and in our newsrooms and allow them to hopefully not allow a lot of those distractions to reach them and let them get on with their jobs, that kind of was how my job felt a lot of the time. I mean, I said to a few people...
And did you feel like you were successful in that?
I hope I was successful in that. I mean, I said to many of my people at the time, if my only job through some of this turmoil is to bear the arrows that are coming towards us on the way through and allow you to get on with your jobs, then sometimes that's what this job entails. And look, I tried my very hardest to do that during the course of last year.
Do you think it was that year has shaken the idea of the independence of the ABC?
I think it's enhanced the idea of the independence of the ABC. I really do. I think in the end what we ended up with was a lot of commentary and a lot of discussion mm-hmm. about why it's important to have an independent ABC, how to get mechanisms and processes in place to protect the independence of the ABC. And I actually think in the long term, particularly now we have a chair, particularly now we'll have an MD shortly, I think that this in the end will be a good reminder to all Australians about why the independence of the ABC is vitally important to all of them.
And to our political masters, or your political masters, more to the point.
Well, whoever the political masters are and whatever they think about the ABC, there should be some distance between that and certainly the content-making editorial priorities of the ABC, and hopefully this little process will reinforce that.
I get the sense that the ABC, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense that the ABC this year is pushing back a bit more. You know, last year, for instance, Emma Alberici had a pretty tough year. The Australian had a go at her Sardinia stuff again, a couple of weeks ago. And I noticed the ABC's put out a media release saying, we stand by the story, and the researcher who's making a lot of these allegations was, employed in those terms. So is this a kind of, I know, maybe I'm wrong, but is the ABC pushing back a bit more, getting a bit more pointy elbows?
So you know what we try not to do is to ever engage in some of the more shrill and, mm-hmm. Unreasonable debates around us. And every Australian has a right, including any of the media outlets or anybody else, to comment on what we do at the ABC. They all pay for us.
Sure.
It's their money. So I never take any sort of criticism or feedback about the ABC to heart. What we do need to do is point out where there are facts and when there are errors. It's not fair to have commentary on the ABC that is simply based on falsehoods. And so I certainly think that I'm determined to ensure that increasingly we at least point out where the facts stand.
So is this a slight new policy? I mean, it's a little bit...
It's not really, but I think some of the commentary and some of the reporting on the ABC last year got to that point of being thoroughly over the top and quite shrill. And I think in those circumstances, there's nothing wrong with saying, look, very dispassionately, let's just put the facts out there and say, actually, here's the truth that sits behind that. And at least let's ensure that that's in the public domain, even if we're not shouting it from the rafters or doing a lot to comment about it publicly, we should at least be pointing it out.
Yeah, because, I mean, okay, it's interesting you should say you don't necessarily care about what, well, not necessarily care, but you try and make it not hurt you. I don't know, have you been, myself, on the other side of, say, a News Limited attack after, week in, week out, as the ABC is? Is it not, surely you wake up on some Monday mornings, read the media section and go, here we go again. Doesn't it feel a bit personal then?
It does, but honestly, I think that's the nature of this job, and I think I was, in many senses, well aware of that when I went into this job, and slightly reluctant in some senses about whether this was the right job for me when I went into it. But having taken it on and having decided that I wanted to see what I could do to support ABC journalism by doing this role, I think slings and arrows come and go, and you just need to sort of be determined to stick to the principles of what we're there to do.
Okay, fair enough. I was interested in a recent headline, again, in The Australian. I don't think it's only The Australian that goes after the ABC, but quite often it is. When the new chair was appointed, the headline was, "Mission for ITA, deliver the ABC back to the people." So what did you do with it?
Well, I don't even know what that means. I mean, the ABC is still consumed by 70% of Australians, on a very regular basis. It's still the most trusted news brand in the country, despite all of the commentary and the storytelling around it. I do think that we have a responsibility constantly to look at the way we choose and report stories to ensure that we are covering the broadest possible range of valid perspectives. And I use that word valid perspectives wisely because I consider this, there are anti-vax stories out there that you don't need to cover because that is not a valid perspective. Mm-hmm. But where there is a person in the community or a group or a particular point of view on a topic that is perfectly valid, is backed by the truth, is, sometimes down to a person's perspective, we should be seeking to proportionally represent all of those.
And do you think you get that right? Because just taking out the kind of, the long-standing enmity of the Murdoch family against the ABC, and that goes way back to Rupert's father, the criticism broadly is the ABC has a kind of left-wing culture that produces biased stories. The output is biased to the left.
So here's what I think, and I may have not expressed this quite in these terms before. I don't think we always get that right, but I don't think it's a bias problem. So I don't think we have a left, Labour, right, liberal, conservative. I don't think there's a bias problem there, because bias implies that you have journalists who are purposely reporting one side of a story over balancing it with the perspective of another part of the story. I think our journalists do a brilliant job in whatever story they choose to ensure that all voices are represented and perspectives are included. What I think we still have to work really hard at is ensuring that in the stories we choose and in the topics we cover and in the people we bring into the coverage of those topics, that we have that broadest range of valid perspectives represented. We get it right most of the time, but I do think, and I talk to our teams about this, I do think we can continue to ensure that we're doing as good a job of that as we can. And I'll give you one example of this, which I have talked to many of our teams about. You take the marriage equality debate. Mm-hmm. Clearly, the result of the vote was 70% of Australians agreed with marriage equality. It is broadly an issue to which there was a lot of consensus in the community around.
Yep.
Yet let's assume there are 30% of Australians who, some of them may be church-going people out in the suburbs, they might attend a mosque, they might whatever. If their religious leader is saying to them, marriage is between a man and a woman, and they really trust their religious leader, I don't think that makes them a bigot if they're struggling with the idea of marriage equality. Now, did we represent those points of view in the marriage equality debate as well as we could have, proportionally? I'm not saying that's 50% of the point of view.
No, it could be 30%.
But let's assume that those voices are valid and that we are giving enough weight to those voices in a marriage equality debate. I think we could have done better on something like that. So I think there's an example of something that's not bias. That is not us kind of.
Well, that goes to the nature of journalism, right? This is how we create stories.
Exactly.
It's about who do we select. It's a selection thing. Maybe it's not bias, but it's certainly a selection.
It's a perspective thing for me. Mm. It is let us work as hard as we can to ensure that the perspectives that we cover in our stories cover the broadest range of valid perspectives in the community. And I think we've got to kind of stay vigilant on trying to do as good a job as we can on that.
So what does that mean, being vigilant? I mean, in a practical sense.
I think constantly looking at how we can improve where we think we're not doing well on those things. It goes to story selection. Are we choosing stories in our editorial approach each day that broadly reflect the interests of the community? Are we ensuring that when we do pick a story that we have been thoughtful to think outside our own experience and to find voices that represent an alternative point of view that might be perfectly valid in that story? And then I think it is, you know, stepping beyond, some of the boundaries in which we often draw our staff, the boundaries in which our audience often comes from, to ensure that we're reflecting the broad Australian perspective. I'm a suburban boy, and I often think the ABC doesn't do a good enough job in some respects in reflecting the interests and the perspectives of suburban Australians. You know, I think we're increasingly doing a good job of rural and regional Australians. Mm. But when it comes to things like cultural diversity and the suburbs and socioeconomic divides in Australia, you know, can we work harder to ensure that those people feel like their taxes are as valuable in going to the ABC as someone who might live, for instance,
in Newtown
or on the lower north shore of Sydney?
Yes. So is the answer to that to make a very conscious effort to say, all right, go and report this story from San Susi or, you know, out in the burbs?
It is. Yeah. I mean, really great example. I mean, you come to the sort of very basic issue of diversity in our audiences. We did a study a little while ago about how much gender balance there was in our coverage. You know, were we giving women a fair sort of proportional sort of view in terms of the voices that we spoke to in our stories? Wasn't very flattering for really? Some of the content choices we were making. Some of our programs and bulletins, 75-80% of the people we were featuring were men.
Wow.
So that's not good enough. You know, that can't be...
I'm surprised by that.
Actually. Right. We can't be reflecting the broadest Australian set of perspectives if we can't even get gender balance right. Hmm. So we've put in place an initiative at the moment. We've put a call out to say, look, if you've got expertise and you don't normally comment on the media but you want to and you're a woman, please get in touch with us. And simply by asking that question within a very short period of time, within almost just a little over a week, we had 2,000 responses from women that said, I've never been asked, but I'd love to contribute.
That's a fantastic. A similar thing happened to Bloomberg. I don't know if you know this story. They went out and made a conscious effort to quote female executives who were invariably just one below the CEO. And, of course, when the kind of crap hit the fan post-GFC, a lot of those women became the CEO. So they had the direct entry to the new CEOs, which was great news for them.
Exactly. And we've talked a lot in recent years at the ABC about cultural diversity. Mm-hmm. And I've always said cultural diversity is critical and vital to ensuring we're representing the broadest set of perspectives in the community. But so is gender diversity, and so is socioeconomic diversity, and is hearing from the suburbs, and is hearing from rural and regional Australia. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to be a bigger issue than cultural diversity, as much ground as we have to gain in that area.
One issue that my UTS colleague, Wanning Sun, she's a media scholar, talks a lot about, and she argues very strongly that the ABC is getting the China debate wrong, that it's engaging in what she calls insinuative journalism about the influence of China. What do you think about that?
I think the influence of China and the impact of China on Australia at the moment is the story of our age. It is only going to get bigger and more interesting. And I think it is interesting that you do a story that seeks to interrogate where either Chinese economic influence or political influence intersects with Australian influence. And suddenly that's called out as some sort of, you know, potentially derogatory thing. I mean, I think we should be providing as much scrutiny as we possibly can on the Chinese relationship in Australia.
Not because all of
it's wrong, but because it is certainly an area to explore for us.
I wouldn't disagree with you for a second about that. It is one of the stories of our ages. I guess her point and others is that it's too often a kind of insinuation rather than a factual evidence-based conversation. She's particularly critical of the recent Four Corners, for instance, or last year's Four Corners, that there's a kind of, there's a narrative out there, you know, started maybe with Clive Hamilton's book about, you know, China's influence in Australia, whatever. There's a narrative out there which says, you know, it's a kind of rerun of Reds Under the Bed, right? China's the new Soviets trying to sort of take our, you know, infiltrate our spy on us, infiltrate our universities, whatever, you name it. And therefore, it's easy to sort of tap into the stream of narrative that insinuates that China's out to get us, but it's harder to get facts to back it up.
Which is exactly why we need to do some journalism on it. It's exactly why we need to be looking closely at where those links and ties are, reporting where there are good stories to tell about you know, the reason we are very committed to a Beijing bureau and to having journalists on the ground in China is to understand the Chinese cultural moments and to thoroughly get to grips with what's going on in China. And that's a critical part of understanding the Chinese influence in Australia. So we're committed to both sides of it, you know, absolutely report on China dispassionately from China, but also to interrogate as much as we can where there is opaque information about where that intersects with life in Australia.
And that's the problem. A lot of it is opaque information.
It is. And so we need to work harder. All of us as the media need to work harder to shed light on the Chinese story.
Do you know how many Chinese-speaking journalists you have? That's a cruel question.
I don't know how many Chinese-speaking journalists
many,
we have. We don't have enough, is my view. We should have more. And it's something I've been quite keen on encouraging is when we, you know, when we look at the representation of Chinese people now in our, particularly our cities, but in Australia, we've got to do a better job of getting more Chinese Australians into the mix.
Okay. Let's go back to the election. Should ABC funding be an election issue?
Well, I think what should be a conversation with the public is the role that the public wants the ABC to play.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have that conversation largely in an election context, don't we?
Well, we do, but if it's simply a funding conversation, I don't think it actually asks the right questions. The ABC can be as big or as small as Australians are willing to allow it to be, and I'm very pragmatic about that. You know, if Australia thought the ABC should be larger than it is or smaller than it is, we should be having a conversation about that. I think what's troubled me sometimes about the conversation about ABC funding is it's sort of, well, please don't touch any of your services. We want you to maintain everything you're doing. We'd like you to expand in rural and regional Australia. We'd like you to offer another service over here, and we'd like you to do a little bit more of that, and we'd like you to be more rigorous, and we'd like you to be more factual. And
we want it all.
But we don't want to pay you as much as we've been paying you. And I think a more transparent debate around what Australians really want and expect from the ABC, I think, would be a good thing. I think it's hard to see that in the context. It's very hard to have a fairly fulsome conversation about any policy area at the moment in the short kind of political cycles that we've seen in recent times.
Do you think the new chair will help that?
I think so. I mean, there's no one in Australia that fundamentally understands the media more than ITA. And I think she comes from a place of wisdom. She has a long view about the media in Australia. She's much more tuned in, I think, to contemporary developments than people might imagine. Nevertheless, she kind of pretty much knows everything there is to know about all sectors of the media. So I think having someone like that with vast experience is, I think, great for the ABC and great for a mature, grown-up conversation about the role of the ABC. So I'm very excited to have our new chair on board and to see where she wants to take discussions about where we go next.
Just finally on funding, in that Senate inquiry into political interference, ABC made a submission. It basically said, we'd like to know our funding money more years in advance. We want to get out of this triennial funding because it's prone to being political interference. And we want, and I quote, you know, a sufficient level of funding to allow the ABC to meet its obligations. Kind of as we've just been talking about. I mean, what actually is that? What does that mean? Sufficient amount of funding to allow the ABC to meet its obligations? Because surely it's as big. I mean, is it possible to put a number on that? How much money do you need?
Well, I think that's the point, that what you want to be able to do is to sort of look at the medium-term cycle in the way production costs are rising, in the way that the media landscape is changing, and make strategic choices around how you then invest public money in that, rather than making year-on-year, very short-term investments. So even if you look at the way we produce content in the ABC, if you're making investment decisions on a, you know, at best 3-year cycle, but often it's shorter than that because of some of the budget changes that have happened in the meantime. Well, how do you know what the best investment is if you're working on cycles like that? Whereas if you've mapped out a strategy over 5 to 10 years, knowing that many things can change over the course of that, but you're making much more strategic decisions in concert with the Department of Communications and with the taxpayers around what it is you're setting out your stall around with a longer funding cycle.
So if I gave you a check with a blank next to where the money goes, what would you spend it on? What would you do that you don't do now?
I don't think it's as simple as that, obviously. You know, what you need to be doing is looking at your technology base over a longer period of time, making sure that you've got contemporary tools, making sure that you're looking at what opportunities are on the horizon to be more efficient in some of the production techniques that you're doing, and then building the right technology set around that, and then ensuring that the journalism and the drama and the comedy and the radio and all of those services that you're then providing are supported by that investment rather than it being the other way around. You often do get the sense, despite the fact that we're privileged to get a lot of money from the taxpayers, it is often a year-to-year proposition in the way we strategically apply that, because there have been so many changes in the cycle of funding.
So another way of looking at that same question, I suppose, is, and this goes to some of the critiques not only by News Limited, by the way, by other news media company, that in essence, ABC Online in particular, is an impediment to selling subscriptions, right? And subscriptions are the lifeblood, or potentially the lifeblood, of other news media. So should the ABC get out of that, leave the commercial media to make money, because you're taking money from people who want to make money?
Well, it's a really good idea for the ABC to get out of online if we only want to serve people over the age of 60. If we want to retain contemporary news services, contemporary content services, obviously I don't think there's a real argument around the fact that any media organisation in today's era isn't looking at digital platforms and working out how to extend its services there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a value for taxpayers' money question. You know, if we just went back to being on television and radio and got out of live news and got out of online news and got out of all of those things that dominate the way people currently use media services, we would be making content for a increasingly small and increasingly marginalised part of the audience. I just don't think that argument stacks up.
Well, that's not fulfilling your obligations, is your point.
So we've got an obligation to universally serve the Australian public. So, you take something like Four Corners on broadcast, at 8:30 on a Monday night, that audience profile that watches Four Corners is dominated by a plus 60 audience.
Yeah.
We've now extended those stories to creating really dynamic, really beautiful, rich online stories out of that, of which the audience is dominated by under 40 audiences. I would rather take a Four Corners story and extend it into the digital realm and serve those audiences with that story than think that Four Corners is primarily the domain of plus 60s. The other thing I'd say about this argument is I think something like 7 of the top 10 online news providers in Australia offer their services for free. There is no subscription. There's no pay-per-view. They're free services. Many of those are international services. So you take the ABC out of the equation in terms of online news, but you would still have a news category online dominated by free services and dominated by international services. And I'm not sure that's good value for Australians either.
Nationalism.
Well, no, it's not nationalism. It's about saying, are Australians getting access to the best quality local news services they can get? And you take the ABC out of an online equation, the answer is they're not.
Okay. I was interested in your view about this. In the Cairncross Cross review that came out recently, one of the many recommendations was to the BBC that it should, quote-unquote, think more carefully about how its news revisions can act as a complement rather than a substitute to commercial news. Is that the same argument we just had? I mean, a complement to. Would that work? Is that something you think about?
So I think about it like this. I've never thought of the ABC as a sort of market failure, do the stuff no one else wants to do type of service. But I do think being a complementary service is a really good way of thinking about it. And I think for a while, the ABC perhaps thought of itself as a competitor in a media market a little too much, whereas what we should be really focused on is that we're providing the public with a good service. You know, for what they've paid for with their taxes, do we give them a good service that is complementary to things that they're able to get elsewhere? I think we do that most of the time in most of the things we seek to do. But that being the focus of the way we think about it, I think it's not a bad way of going.
Mm. That's an interesting. So what would that mean in essence? Because it wouldn't change everything you do necessarily.
Well, it might change some things we do, but I think coming at it from that perspective where each time we're initiating a new service or each time we're commissioning a program, we're thinking about it, as I think we mostly do, in the sense of, does that, you know, provide Australians with a crucial service that, you know, they can't always get from somewhere else? Mm-hmm. And is it complementary to the things they can get elsewhere? I mean, one of the conversations we've had with our local newsrooms, for instance, is how do we refocus our resources in the local state newsrooms around value adding on stories that really critically matter to the local community, rather than necessarily just covering all of those stories that are otherwise in the news agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So it does go to, should we cover a few less kind of car crashes and house fires and low-ranking court stories and move more of that resource to providing people with more context and mm-hmm. policy analysis and more investigative journalism at a local level?
Yep.
So I suppose that's an example of what I mean.
Yeah, no, it's a good example. Another one I'll try on you is that, especially in regional areas, there's a lot of concern about, you know, local news websites, local newspapers, local radio closing. That's creating. So, is there a role, do you think, of the ABC to, as it were, support local, independent, maybe commercial in the sense it would like to make money, news providers, sort of in a training sense maybe, or other ways?
So I've always been of a view that we should be a lot more generous in sharing our content in some of those places whereby, we are doing something that might be useful to either a community media group or, you know, local community groups or even local media. And we've had a few initiatives around that sort of thing. It's not a view that I think is equally shared by everyone in the ABC, but nevertheless, it goes to that for me around that idea of us kind of slightly stepping back from us being a competitor in the media market and going more to, are we providing a fundamental service that everybody has access to?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you were the MD of the ABC, what would you do to make the ABC better?
I would ensure that as I am going to continue to be the director of news, that I would make the news services as good as they could possibly be. But look, I think one of the things
you
that...
You don't want to be the MD?
I don't want to be the MD, no. Yeah. I think we've got a very fine candidate in David Anderson, who hopefully, as we go through this process, will be confirmed in that role. One of the things I've talked to with David, and we've swapped a lot of notes on, is how do we get back, in some senses, to our roots on some of these things?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of working with communities and on their behalf, the idea that public interest journalism and reflecting the Australian story in a very real sense is key to our agenda and key to the way the ABC looks at its role in the sort of broader media ecology. And I think in terms of the era that we've come out of in, you know, that for a long time the ABC has either been expanding services or looking at how it can really reach out in digital services, I think we're going to be facing a period where kind of rallying around the core functions of what we do and really getting back to what we provide the community, making sure it's valuable, will be a good thing to do.
Do you think consensus can – because you ask, you know, 10 people in the street and you have 10 different answers to that question, right? So how do you decide that?
Well, I think we should be guided by strategy, guided by the new chair, guided by the way that editorially we look at the contemporary media landscape and can make good choices about where we think we can best add value for taxpayers. I really think that's got to be part of the equation. It's saying, well, what do audiences need from us in the contemporary environment? Are we constantly tuned into that and changing course to give the public value? I've always said, I think every Australian should be able to count the dollars in the ABC and see the value of them. And if there are times when we're not giving back to every Australian full value for the dollars they've given us, then we need to try harder.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a couple of broader questions because we are running out of time. You've got kids. Would you tell them to be a journalist?
Look, I would if that was their inclination, simply because I've had a hell of a ride. It's a great life. And some of the adventures and stories and the people you meet and the places you go are still fantastic. And I think people are still going to want stories told and going to want to be informed no matter how the platforms and the technology changes. So I'm not one of those that is pessimistic about the future of journalism, though the future of journalism may look very different to the past.
How do you think it'll look? Like, for instance, will you be sitting next to a robot?
Robots will probably play more of a role as, you know, they do increasingly in production and those sorts of things. But I think it will be more personalised and it will be more on demand. And I think one of the big disruptions that we're facing in the media, possibly bigger than all those we've faced already, is this idea that audience habits will get to the point where the schedule and the clock and the programs at certain times of the day are no longer the majority way of consuming.
Well, I think we're almost there, aren't we?
We are, but I'm not sure a lot of media companies have made that calculation and are ready for that. So fully on-demand, fully personalised news products, for instance, what does that really mean? When you think about it, it's more difficult than it sounds. And I don't think we've made a lot of those changes yet. There's still a lot of that to come.
No, we still believe in appointment TV, for instance.
Right. So, you know,
we still believe in the news. How much, you know, of your budget goes to making a news bulletin that maybe not a lot of people, well, far fewer people anyway, watch than they did, say, 10 years ago?
So we've done pretty good at changing that resource mix to ensure that more of those resources are reporting to other platforms. But take this. I mean, if you're if you get in your car at 6:45 in the evening and it's a connected car, in a few years' time, the PM program is not going to be a lot of good for you if it started at 6:30 because I've missed the top 15 minutes of the stories in our program. We're going to be in a place whereby your expectation when you get in the car is that PM will start from the top no matter what time it is, and it'll be up to date. And it will probably be as long as your journey home because your car will be plugged into Google Maps and will know exactly how long your journey is going to be.
Or edit it for you.
Exactly.
Well, that's very exciting, though, isn't it?
Very exciting, but there's a lot of thinking we've got to do around how you provide those services, how you provide news services that are constantly up to date while still being in depth, while still having great journalism in them, while still serving the needs of pretty much a personalised audience profile.
Do you think the ABC, I mean, you're a very agile guy, I'm blowing smoke in you up your bottom here, but you're an agile guy. Do you think the ABC culturally is able to be as agile as that?
I think so, and I think more so, absolutely more so than ever before. I mean, remember, I was a guy that got in there and sought to bring News 24 into existence in the ABC, and I think we have come an awful long way in cultural terms, in terms of adjusting to change. And I look at some of the other companies out there in the commercial sector now that have got enormous change ahead of them because they're for the first time bringing broadcast and print and radio resources together. And now they've got to do the piece of work that I think the ABC's already mostly done of how to create multi-platform, you know, lots of different platforms, lots of different styles of content, how to produce that with a diminishing resource. So I think we're in pretty good shape.
Well, Gavin Morris, that is a wonderful phrase to leave it on. And look, I think we could talk for another 2 hours, but you have probably meetings to go to. And probably I do too. Thank you so much for your time.
Peter, I might even duck into the newsroom and see if there's some stories going.
I love to see you do that. Thank you so much to our special guest today, Gavin Morris, the ABC's news director, for some great insights. Make sure you've subscribed to The Fourth Estate on your favourite podcast app so you can hear us talk media, politics and a few things in between at your leisure. We'll be back with more next week, but in the meantime, you can stay in touch with us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is Fourth Estate AU. My name is Peter Frey, and thank you so much for listening.